Tonight we're going to talk about choices and decisions. We have a number of young people here, but this is not just for them because this is something that all of us have to deal with. Choices that we make in life or have in life and the decisions that we have to make whenever we're faced with decisions or we're faced with choices. So I want you to think about some of the things that we talk about tonight. Maybe it'll help you, and I hope it does at least. Following God is always and has been a matter of choice. Sometimes we'd like for it not to be. We'd like to just twist somebody's arm and get them to do what we believe is the right thing for them to do and to follow God. But it's always been a matter of choice. God's created us that way. It was that way in the Garden of Eden. And hopefully we'll understand that. You remember when God created Adam and put him in the Garden of Eden, he was told to about the fruit that was there and the benefits that was there, and said, you can eat of all of the fruits that's in the garden, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, don't eat of that, because when you do, you'll die. And you know what happened? Of course, he took of that fruit. But what I want us to emphasize here and remember is that that was a choice. That was a choice. Sometimes when I've studied with people, you know, they think, well, that was kind of cruel of God to put man in the Garden of Eden and then, you know, dangle something out there in front of him that would be enticing that man would ultimately give into. But the bottom line is none of us, you boys and you young ladies, you older people, none of us want to be a puppet. Probably all of us have heard the story of Pinocchio and how he was controlled with strings for a while when he was made originally. That changed as the story went along, but we know what a puppet is. He's controlled by something else. And if we hadn't had the right to make choices, that's all we would have been, nothing more than a puppet. We wouldn't be able to make the decisions that we made. I watched these boys out there play basketball a while ago, and by the way, the basketball program in North part of the panhandle is in good hands if they all play like them boys do. They're pretty good. But you know, whenever they take a shot, that's a choice that they make. Now, if we didn't have that right of making choices, somebody else would make that decision. So we appreciate the fact that we can make those kinds of choices and decisions. In Joshua chapter 24, 14 through 15, you remember the children of Israel had wandered through the wilderness. They came into the promised land. Joshua became the leader. Moses went up on the mountain and was allowed to look into the promised land, but couldn't go in because of a mistake that he had made. But Joshua led them, and they've occupied the land, they've conquered the land, and God speaks to them. The Lord speaks to them through Joshua in the first 13 verses of this chapter. Then in verses 14 and 15, this is what Joshua says to them. Now therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth. Put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land we now dwell. But he says, as for me and my house, we've made a choice. He didn't say it quite that. But as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. A lot of you may have that on a plaque or something in your house. And that's neat to do that. Margaret has that, and we have that in our house. But you know where it's really important to have that? Right. Heart. You know, that's where it's important. To really make up our mind and determination that that's what we're going to do. But it's a choice. And that's what Joshua's telling them. He said, you see what God has done for you? And that's what the first 13 verses were really about what God had given them, what God had done for them, and how he had brought them to this point. But he said, now it's up to you to choose. No, follow that. You don't follow that, but choose. But he said, I don't know what we're going to do. And of course, that's what he wanted them to do. They did for a while and began to make some bad decisions. In the New Testament now, Matthew chapter 11, 28 through 30, Jesus speaking, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest to your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. You see that? You've heard that passage. You've heard that passage many, many times. We all have. You've used it. Brethren, whenever you teach, come unto me. Jesus says it's up to you. You don't have to make the decision. Come to me. Come to me. I have a granddaughter. She's has three boys, my great-grandchildren, one set of identical twins, and now she's expecting for the fourth child, and we're all holding our breath, hoping it's going to be a little girl this time. But if it's not, you know what? We're going to love those great-grandsons, all four of them, if that's what it turns out to be. And she's really hoping it's not another set of twins. They've kind of got their hands full right now. But, you know, we worried about her an awful lot whenever she was growing up. We kept everybody that come along, everybody that came along, would try to get her to be baptized. And they would just, you know, they would twist her arm. Finally, there was a meeting in Oklahoma City, and a bunch of young people and preacher, I can't remember who it was. Sean, I don't know where you're at. He may have left. Oh, there he is, way back there in the back. He must knew I was going to talk about it. And you might have been the one, you know. I don't know. That was putting a lot of pressure on her. I kind of got her off, you know, when I saw what was going on. And I said, Ellen, there's nothing that your granddaddy wants more than to see you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior and allow Him to accept you by being buried with Him in baptism, believing truly that He's the Son of God. But don't let any of these people here make you or talk you into doing something that you're not ready to do from in here. Because that's what counts. And that's the only way it's going to count. It's the only way it's going to have meaning. But you're going to have to make that choice. Well, she didn't right then. If I hadn't said that, she probably would have just shut everybody up. But she did eventually, and she's a fine Christian lady today, and we're very thankful for that. But come unto me. Jesus said, that's your choice, and that's what I want for you, and you need to come do that. Matthew chapter 16, verse 24, Jesus said to his disciples, if any man will come after me, it's still a matter of choice. If any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Everyone who makes a decision in the area of right and wrong makes it on the basis of certain propositions that are characteristic to his or her level of behavior. And I had to work at that to get that statement. In fact, I think I copied it out of a magazine or something. But anyway, I kind of like it. Let's read it again. Everyone who makes a decision in the area of right and wrong makes it on the basis of certain propositions that are characteristic to his or her level of behavior. And that's what I'm going to talk to you about tonight, is the different levels of behavior that all of us go through. All right, let's look. Everyone falls into one of four levels of behavior, or they do according to my plan anyway. And since I'm doing this, I guess that's what they do. Number one, levels of behavior. Number one is the natural level of behavior. And we had a newborn baby here just recently. I think since this meeting started, or right just before, or whatever. You know what that baby's doing? That's the natural level of behavior. What does that baby do when it gets hungry? It cries, doesn't it? Doesn't take very long to know that when she or he cries, what's going to happen? Good mother, good father, she or he is going to be fed, you know. And that's what happens. That's what we're talking about when we talk about the natural level of behavior. People who decide everything according to natural impulses, natural drives, natural instincts. A lot of those are okay. The decisions that are made based on this level are not necessarily bad. They can be later on, but not necessarily. Most decisions are based on the level, however, focus on ourselves. And if that's not changed as we mature physically and mentally, then there can be a problem with us. But the idea is, if it feels good, do it. If it tastes good, eat it. drink it or whatever, you know. That's the idea. I'm not saying that's necessarily the right thing for us to do, but that's the idea in that level of behavior. The idea that the greatest good in life is personal pleasure. See? Okay? 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15 through 17. I believe the Holy Spirit really speaks of that here. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world, and the world passeth away, and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. Romans chapter 12, verse 2. This particular level of decision making is known as conforming to the world a lot of times. Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is a good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And again, it's a choice that we have. Be not conformed, the Holy Spirit says through the Apostle Paul, but he says it's your choice. It's up to you. Okay? Now, most of these young people here, it's your choice. Most of these young people here, these guys and these gals and others that may be scattered in different parts of the building here, and it's true of all of us, but you guys right now, where you're at, see, you're evolved from that. You're beyond this, aren't you? Shake your head. Yeah. Okay. You're not, right? Okay. You're beyond that. You're not that way. See, you're not, you don't let the, you know there are certain things that you shouldn't do and you don't do, right? There are certain things it's okay to do and you should do and you do. And you're learning that right now. We all gone through that, every one of us. None of that's any different. Okay? But there's another level that we grow into, that we mature into. We call this the social level of behavior. Gage, how old are you again? 10? Is that right? Okay, how old are you, son? 7. 11. I knew you wasn't no 7. I have to take my hearing aids out to put this on, so, you know, bear with me. It's all about the same age. All of you, you're all about the same age. And you young ladies over here, too, about the same age, maybe a little younger, some a little older. But you're going into a different deal. What happens when you go to school a lot of times? People are doing things that maybe you've been told by your parents and that you've heard some of the teachers here in the church say that you shouldn't do. But you see other guys doing it and other gals doing it. And so all of a sudden you're faced with a decision, see? You know what we call that? We call that peer pressure. Have y'all heard that word, peer pressure? Yeah. You know what that means? It means everybody around you is doing something and they're doing it. You understand that maybe because of your maturity, because you've been taught, and maybe I shouldn't do that, but everybody else is doing it. Used to be a song when we were kids. Everybody's doing it, chewing their, picking their nose and chewing it. You wouldn't do that, would you? But that was a song. Still a song. It's just not very popular anymore. These are decisions that are based on what society thinks or what everyone else is doing, okay? What are others wearing? The fads, the jewelry, tattoos, hairstyles, etc. I try to, before I give this lesson, try to work on that. I got to tell you a tattoo story. When I went off into the Navy, you're going to love this. When I went off into the Navy, my grandmother gave me a lot of instruction before I left home. And she was a little old gal about like that, weighed about 90 pounds, soaking wet. But just before I left, she shook that old long, and I mean her fingers looked like it was that long, when she would shake it at me. And she said, "Sonny boy, I don't want you to come back with no old mark on your arm or your chest. If God had wanted a mark put on your body, he would have put it there." No offense. Huh? Anybody else? But you know how many times I stood in a tattoo line? All up the West Coast, you know, and in Hong Kong. I wanted a tattoo so stinking bad. Everybody else was getting it. I mean, everybody. And I'd stand, hopefully I'd be the next one, the next one. There's a couple of things that bothered me. The needle, for one thing, kind of bothered me a little bit. But you know what really got me? And I'd get up there close to getting that tattoo, is I could hear my grandmother say, "If God," and that helped me a lot. And I didn't, you know. My son left to go in the Navy. Guess what his old daddy did to him? Same thing. We're living in a different world today. Different. You know, there's a lot of fads. There's a lot of things that go on. I was passing out papers. I taught history in a junior college, history and government. I was passing out papers one day, and there's this little old gal. This is going to get somebody here, too, probably. There's this little old gal, little black girl, just as cute and pretty a little girl as you'll ever see. And she had these piercings, you know. She had on this side, she had some kind of jewelry. I don't know. How do they keep those things attached to their cheek? I don't know, but it was stuck in there like that. And I just stopped. I say things before I think, and you already know that. But I laid that paper down on her desk, and I looked at her, and I said, "Darling," I said, "doesn't that hurt?" She looked up at me, pretty little old brown eyes, and she said, "What?" And I said, "That, you know." She just shook her head like, "You don't know what you're talking about, old man." And I guess I didn't, but, you know, things are different now. And I'm not saying it's wrong for you to get a tattoo. That's up to your parents and, you know, and you. I'm not saying it's wrong to get piercings. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to point out to you that we've all been there in regards to what other people are doing and us having to make a decision on, am I doing it because everybody else is doing it? Is that why I'm doing it? Am I doing it because it's the right thing? Am I doing it because it's the best thing for me? See, and we'll go on to a little farther in just a minute, but you see, you get the idea of what I'm talking about. Decisions on this level are based on what the majority rules. Everybody else doing it? That's what advertising appeals to. They put this stuff on TV, throw it out there. Everybody wearing these kind of jeans. Man, you people know what? Mercy. I was tickled to death to get enough money to buy a pair of Levi's. You know what blue jeans cost now? And they're all cut up and they've got holes in them. And they sell them that way off the shelf. Can you believe that? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. But yeah, it's popular and people do that. And they advertise those things. And, you know, stopped one time. We're on our way to perform a wedding at Beaumont, Texas. Margaret says, "I need a dress." I said, "We'll buy one on the way, hon." So we stopped at one of these outlet malls, and there was a store there called the Dress Barn. Y'all heard of the Dress Barn? What do you think they'd sell in a Dress Barn? You know what they didn't sell? They didn't sell dresses. They did not. There wasn't a dress in that store. I took the lady. I said, "Come out here. I want to show you." She thought, "Don't beat her up." I said, "Look at the name of the store. It's the Dress Barn, and you don't sell dresses? I don't understand." Found another store. Little old skirts about that long and such like, you know. And we finally found a place to get her a dress. But, see, advertisement. That's the social level. What everybody's doing it. We don't have to be that way. Peer pressure, our social pressure, is probably the greatest single pressure people face today, young or old. I'm picking on you guys. I'm not picking on you, but I'm targeting you, all of y'all, because you're younger and you haven't experienced a lot of this yet, and you're experiencing it right now. I know you are. You've already had to make some choices, haven't you? You've seen other people doing things. You know, I shouldn't do that because they're all doing it just because they're doing it. But they're not the only ones. You know what? These old people over here have to face that too. Everybody's buying a new John Deere tractor. I guess I ought to go in debt and buy a new John Deere tractor, you know? See, we all face that. It's all a challenge that we have. Maybe a little more for you guys. Exodus 23 and 2, "Thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil." This is way back with the law of Moses. Don't follow a bunch of people, a group of people. Don't follow the multitude to do something that's wrong, do something that's evil. Matthew chapter 7, verse 13, Jesus said, enter in at the straight gate. You notice that word straight? Spelled a little different than we usually talk about a straight string. That's the way you spell a straight, which is a passageway from one, maybe one body of water to another body of water. The strait that goes from the Atlantic Ocean to the Mediterranean Sea, see? Enter ye in at the straight gate implies a narrow passageway. Enter ye in at the straight gate. For wide is, broad is the way and that leadeth, wide is the gate and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction. And many there be that go in thereat, but straight is the gate and narrow is the way that leadeth to life and few there be that find it. You know why it's few there be that find it? Because most people are going along with what the multitude says, see? 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 1 through 4. Let me read this with you. I can't quote this one. Maybe I won't mess it up too bad by reading it. This is from the New King James. Thought it might flow a little better maybe for us. Therefore, since Christ suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves also in the same mind, for he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, and he no longer should live the rest of his time in the flesh for the lust of men, but for the will of God. For we have spent enough of our past lifetime doing the will of the Gentiles. Notice what he's saying. We've done enough bad things already. When we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelings, drinkings, partyings, and abominable idolatries. In regard to these, we think it's strange that you do not run with them to the same excess. Excuse me, let me read that again. In regard to these, they think it's strange that you do not run with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. That's a lot of reading. They're going to think you're strange. People you go to school with, people we work with, right? People we go to ball games with and sit in the stands and watch games and such like. We don't do what they do. We don't go along with the bad things that other people do. That's described here. They're going to think it's strange that we don't do that. Who was it? Somebody was giving a little lesson to the young people here today, yesterday, sometime or another this week. Talked about peer pressure a lot. Talked about people making fun of you or teasing you because you don't do what everybody else is doing. Well, let me tell you, I want to give you, you heard this the other day, I'm going to give it to you again. Anytime that you see something that's wrong, you know it's wrong, you know you shouldn't do it, and you say no to it, good deal. You say no to it. They're going to try you again, I promise you. They're going to try you again. Maybe the next day, maybe next week, but they're going to try you again. And then what are you going to do? You're going to say no. I'm not going to do that. Go ahead if you want to, but I'm not going to do that. You don't have to preach them a sermon necessarily. I don't care if you do, but you don't have to. Just say no. Let's say no. Here's what happens. Here's where we have a failure sometime. After about the fourth or fifth time, maybe they hit you again and you think, you know, I'm getting a little tired of this. And you say yes. And you go along with it. Every time, everything that you've done up to that point has just been washed away. That's just meant nothing. All you got to do is give in one time, and they got their claws into you. They got their hooks into you. You don't want to ever do that. Had a guy on our ship one time, had been in a while, and his name's John Williams. Some people you just remember their names, and some people you don't. Well, John was the kind of guy that you just remembered. And John, to a fault sometimes, would not spend any money. When I say to a fault, Jonesy, you got any razors I could borrow? And that's what I mean to a fault. He could have at least went and bought some razors to shave, you know. But he'd bum them. But he didn't spend money. He saved his money. People might ask John, say, John, what are you doing with saving that money? He said, when I get out of here, I'm getting out and buying a brand new Chevrolet. Buying a brand new car. And so he'd say no. That was one thing. Another thing, he was a good boy. He come from a good home, and he was a good boy. He knew better than to do a lot of things that people were trying to get him to do. And at first, now I want you to listen to this, at first, everybody made fun of him. Oh, you're a goody two-shoes, and I can't remember all the silly things they called him because he wouldn't go along with what everybody else was doing. But you know what? After about 2 or 3 months, and I know it sounds like a lifetime sometimes, but you know what happened? They quit bugging him. Somebody new might come along and say, what's the matter with him? But he won't go and do what the rest of us are doing. And you know what? Some of these old hardened sailors that had been in the Navy for 10, 12 years or longer would say, hey, you get off John's back. John knows what he wants. And he's standing on his convictions, and they would defend him. But had John given in just one time way back there and went along with the others, that wouldn't have ever been said about him. I met a lot of guys and made a lot of friends when I was in the Navy. I had one old shipmate that drove all the way from Missouri to come and see me, and that was John Williams. I got out quite a bit before he did. And you know what John was driving when he came up our driveway? A brand new Chevrolet. And that was, he got that with the money he saved from saying no to all these rowdy things that other sailors wanted him to go along with. If you do it, you'll come out on top in a lot of different ways. I got carried away there, but let's go on. But you understand, we just got to learn to deal with that. And you, these guys, hey, parents, grandparents, church leaders, help them. You know, it's tough. And you say, well, yeah, but we went through it. We had it too, but not like they do. I promise you, the temptations and such like that's out there today, I'm just so thankful that I wasn't tested with a lot of that stuff. Somebody said it here, I don't know who it was, somebody we were just talking about smoking pot, about smoking marijuana. Well, we'd run somebody out of town. They tried to do that back when I was growing up. Is that you, Dewey? We was talking about that. I can't remember somebody. But that's not the case anymore. It's pretty much an accepted situation. The pornography, the junk that goes on today, and the availability of that sort of thing. Folks, help these guys. Be patient with them, give understanding to them, and help them. Because it's a tough road out there. But don't tell you something. You guys are tough, and you can do it. You can do it. You can be strong. You can be good Christian men. You can be good, godly Christian ladies. I know you can. I know you can, all of you. Hang in there. Moral level of behavior. We're stepping up the ladder a little bit. Decisions are made not by natural instincts or social pressure, but by our conscience, or by our conscience. These are people who care about the world around them. They have things that they're concerned about. They march for cancer research. They give blood. They do many wonderful things for others. Some are Christians and some are not. Margaret in our community is probably one of the hardest working volunteers for the American Cancer Society. She doesn't get paid for it, but she works very hard, has tirelessly in the past few years, not so much now, but has in the past, to help raise awareness of the problems of cancer and bring about help for cancer research. Many of the people that she works with and have been associated with work as hard as she does, and they try very diligently to do the same things because they have a moral conviction about the need for that, to deal with that particular problem in that particular situation. But they're not Christians. Some of them are, but most are not. And it's not because of a godly thing. It's because they just have a conviction about it. They have a moral conscience about the fact that something needs to be done, see. In the Bible, I think we have a couple of examples. There's a place in Luke chapter 7. Now, this centurion may have been influenced quite a bit by the Jews at that time. He taught a lot of them. He helped them build a synagogue. I'm not going to read that with you. You can. Luke chapter 7, 1 through 9. But he had a servant that was sick and ready to die. And he had heard about Jesus. And he'd heard that Jesus healed people. So he sent some of his servants and all to go find Jesus and tell him about it, about this situation, so this guy could be healed. And Jesus said, "I'll come." And Jesus went. The ones that went were elders. They were from the synagogue and these Jewish leaders. And they came to Jesus and they said to him, he's worthy of this. He's built us a synagogue. That's what kind of man he is. He's a good man. And he said, we would like for you to come and heal his servant. And so Jesus did. Whenever he came, the centurion said, "Oh, wait a minute. I'm not worthy that you should come under my roof. I just wanted you to say the word and heal him." See, what kind of faith that he had, but Jesus healed him. Now, my point is in bringing this man up is, whether he was a godly man, a religious-minded man, he may have been, I don't know. Whether he was or wasn't, he cared about his servant. He had compassion on his servant. He didn't want to see him die. And there was a chance that maybe he could be healed. Well, that's what he wanted. Whoops, back up here. The centurion. Everybody's familiar with the account of the centurion, Luke chapter 10, verses 30 through 37. This man fell among thieves. Jericho, coming down Jericho, fell among thieves. And he was beaten and he was robbed. And this Samaritan come along after a priest and a Levite had come by and just walked right on by. And these were religious people that should have cared about other people. That should have had compassion on someone that had fallen among thieves and had been beaten and stripped and robbed. But they did nothing. They just went on their way. And this centurion came by. And everybody looked at centurions. They were despised, see? But this centurion came by and he saw him. And here's the key in that particular reading. He had compassion on him. There's nothing said about him being a godly man. I don't know what his religion was. Nothing said about that at all. The point that Jesus is trying to make in giving this account is the fact that he cared about another individual. And he had compassion and that compassion compelled him to help the guy. He took him up, bound up his wounds, took him to town, left him at an inn, gave the innkeeper some money, and said, "Take care of him. If that's not enough, keep taking care of him. When I come back, I'll reimburse you." See, that's a man that was made decisions based on the moral level of behavior. Well, we come right down to the spiritual level. This is where I usually get in trouble with somebody. Spiritual level of behavior. This level is not based on a complete list of what one must do and must not do. I'm going to tell you, it'd be a whole lot easier for me if it was. It'd be a lot easier if it was that way. But it's not, I don't think. Instead, it's based on your decision, your decision, your decision, my decision to glorify the Lord God in the choices that we make. It's up to us. And he puts it on our plate. I told this somebody the other day. Let me back up here and tell you this little story. when our oldest daughter was a senior, for the first time, the school decided they was going to have a dance at the school. Tracy was, she was probably as good a godly young lady as there was in that school system. She was a dandy. We were very proud of Tracy and still are. She's 53 and we're still proud of her, very proud of her. Couldn't have asked for a better daughter. And Tracy come in from school and she said, "Daddy, they're having a dance at the school." I said, "Yeah, darling, I know. We're class parents. I know. That decision's been made. Well, now you tell me and they'll be no and I won't dance." Now, parents, everybody here makes their decisions based on the way they run their home and their family. And I prayed about whether or not we were making the right decisions. I didn't know if I did, and I still don't know if I made the right decision. But this is what I told her. I said, "Darling, I'm not going to do that." I said, "That's going to be up to you." "No, Daddy, you just tell me no, and I won't do it." And I said, "Well, don't do it, but it's not only because I'm telling you no. If you do it, I love you. If you don't do it, I love you. Now, I don't care you one way or another. It's a decision you're going to have to make." She's a senior in high school. She's about to go out on her own. She's about to go off to college. She's going to be faced with these decisions. She couldn't run home and ask Daddy about this or that every time there was a choice to be made. She needed to make it herself. But that's not what she wanted to hear. I understood where she was coming from. She wanted me to tell her one way or the other, and then that's what she'd do. And then she could tell her friends, she said, "Nope, my daddy said no, and I'm not dancing." And then there nobody would have bugged her about it. That would have been it. Sometimes I don't finish this story. You want me to finish it? Okay. She went to the school dance, and she danced one dance. She come home, and she said, "I'll never do that again as long as I live." She probably has, I don't know. But that night, that was it for her. It wasn't what she thought it was going to be. But you get the idea. I hope you do. It's not a Christianity, a spirituality in our lives. It's not a matter of a list of do's and don'ts that we put on the wall. Do this, don't do this. You can do this, but you can't do this. It's a matter. It's a choice that God gives us. He wants us to glorify Him in the decisions that we make, in the life that we live. But again, just like Adam and Eve way back there in the garden, He wants us to do it. He wants us to make that decision. Romans chapter 14, 7 through 9. "For none of us liveth to himself, no man dieth to himself. Whether we live, whether we live unto the Lord. Whether we die unto the Lord. Whether we live therefore or die, we are the Lord's. For to this end Christ both died and rose and revived, and that he might be Lord both of the dead and the living." See, we belong to the Lord. It's our choice to make. What are we going to do? Let's suppose, now I want to move this on, this is not you guys. I hope this doesn't apply to any of y'all right here. This is going to be a little bit, this is for some of the older ones. Suppose you're offered dinner cocktails at a restaurant. You're going out with some friends and they're ordering drinks. "I want a vodka Collins." "Is that a drink?" "I want bourbon on the rocks or whatever, you know. I want a Coors or whatever." People are ordering drinks. And it comes time for you to take an order. If you operate on the natural level, that's where we started out. If it tasted good to you, you'd do it. No questions asked. Wouldn't be any problems if that was the level you was operating on. But none of us are going to operate on that level, are we? Don't shake your head no, please. No. Okay. Nobody shook their head no. Well, I'm worried about you. You know, I think everybody's afraid. This is not an auction. Nobody's going to have to buy anything. I ended up baptizing a fellow, and I knew I had to have one shot at him, and I met him at a horse sale in Fort Worth. And I didn't think much about it. They just said he'd be there, so I thought, well, I'll go and I'll catch him, and then we'll have a chance to visit. And we did. But they started auctioning off these horses, and they started at $60,000 and went up, you know. And I sat there statue still. Boy, I wasn't about to move. natural level. If it tastes good, you're good. If you're operating on just the social level, if you wanted to fit in with all the group that was around you, you'd order something probably. Right? Moral level, godly issue is not there. The fitting in's not a big deal. Taste wasn't an issue. If it didn't threaten your moral standard in any way, no threat to you, you'd go ahead and do it if you wanted to. Whoops, back up here. Spiritual level, or the Christian level we might say, how would you do that? What would you do? See? That's where we have to make these decisions. We'd ask the question maybe, the thought might go through, would the act itself be wrong? Would it be wrong for me to have a drink in this setting here tonight? You might add this to it. How would it honor or dishonor Christ and what he stood for and maybe my relationship with him if I did this? See? That should be something you consider and think about. See? How would it affect the spiritual well-being of another? You know, I'll tell you what, folks, if you ever get caught in a situation like that and you wonder about it, if you'll write those things down and maybe you can think of some other ideas on a piece, on a card and keep it in your shirt's pocket and look that out and just remind yourself of that, I think you'll all make the right decision, don't you? Yeah. See? But that's what operating on the spiritual level is. That's what causes us to think about things of this nature. Romans chapter 14, 21 through 3. How would it affect another person? How would it affect another person? It's good neither to eat flesh, nor drink wine, nor anything whereby thy brother stumbleth. Wouldn't you just hate to do something and allow yourself to do something that caused somebody else to do something? To accept it, and that ultimately destroyed his soul. Maybe it's take a drink, and he sees a Christian person do that, and so he starts, and I'm going to talk about that Saturday night. He starts, and he hasn't got the control or the self-will or the power or whatever to keep from doing it again and again and again. And somebody buries him like they buried my daddy. And he was 62 years old and he looked 90. He had every kind of problem, physical problems you can imagine, all because of alcohol. And he died on Skid Row. On Skid Row. You know what Skid Row is? That's where all the drunks and the winos, and that's what he was. A wino. That's what he had come to. That's all they could afford. And that's where he died. See? Didn't ever plan that. I don't talk about that Saturday night. We don't want to cause somebody else to stumble. And maybe, and I'm not saying that he was influenced by a Christian taking a drink. I'm not saying that at all. But, you know, it could happen. And it probably has happened to some people that sort of thing has happened to. Whereas the Christian goes on and he maybe, that's the only time he did it. Or maybe he just does it occasionally. And he handles himself well. But your influence that you have on with other people. Well, we're about out of time. I told somebody a while ago I couldn't see that clock. I kept thinking I was quitting with plenty of time, and I get back there and I've been doing it longer than I thought. Spiritual level behavior. Oh, let's look at this. Think about the dress, how you dress. Choices that we make in regards to dressing. First Timothy, can I read that? Can y'all read that? First Timothy chapter, and this is not the King James or the New King James. I don't know what this is, but I thought it was neat. First Timothy chapter 2, 9 through 10, that women adorn themselves in decent apparel using discretion, not with braided hair or gold or pearl or costly clothing, but that which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. Okay, you have to make somebody say, well, you're picking on the girls, just picking on the girls and the way they dress. No, I'm picking on the guys too. I'm picking on the guys too. Y'all know that. Cage knows that. I don't know if he heard me a while ago. I looked over him. I said, you've changed clothes, son. Why'd you change clothes? You just looked all right a while ago. You didn't think it was appropriate for church service, did you? So you changed clothes. You've been playing basketball out here. That's okay. That's great. It applies to guys too. I went to California with Justin Springer. Fella gets up to help wipe on the table one Sunday morning. I don't know who he was. I have no idea. I just know he had a t-shirt on that said, "This bud's good for you. This bud would be good for you," or something like that. And a picture of a glass of beer on it. And he's waiting on the table. I thought, when are we going back to Oklahoma, man? No. See? He may not have been aware of what that thing said. I don't know, and he had on Bermuda shorts and all. I know times change, and I know things, styles change and such like, and I'm not jumping on anybody, but we need to keep in mind dress. When our girls was growing up, mini skirts were this, boy. I mean, they were getting mini now. I mean, they were really getting short. I tell you how bad it got at Elix. Sean, I tell you how bad it got at Elix. He just come from Elix in the meeting. There was two guys that told the elders, "Don't call on us to help wait on the table anymore and assist." And they said, "Well, why not? What's the matter?" And they thought, boy, these boys are fixing to bolt and run. And they said, "It's awfully hard to keep our mind where it needs to be whenever we pass the emblems down an aisle and you can see the girls' underwear because of how short their dresses, their skirts are." Now, I don't know what's too short and what's not, but that's too short, folks. For school, for church, for any place. See? Got their attention. You know what the elders started teaching on? They started teaching on that. And they needed to. See? Need to be careful about things like that. When during that time, our girls were just growing up, they weren't old enough at that time. And the shorter dresses got, it seemed, in the style-wise, Margaret, bless her heart, she just made our daughter's dresses longer until they were literally, I'm not kidding you, we got pictures to prove it if you doubt it. They were literally dragging the ground. You know, people thought they were trying to start a fad. They weren't trying to start anything. It was just trying to make a statement. We're not going to do that. Our Margaret wasn't going to let them do that. Well, back up here. Evil communications, 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33, associate corrupt good manners. Evil association. King James says evil communications, talking about associations, corrupt good manners. The friends that we associate with, it's tough. And folks, you young ladies and you young men, you're at an age right now where you got a lot of friends that are close to you. And I'm going to tell you right now, in the next few years, you're going to grow up, and they're going to grow up, and they're going to begin to embrace some things and make some changes possibly in their life that make them a little bit different than what they are right now. And your friendships may have to change later on. You may have to say, wait a minute, we've been friends ever since we was in kindergarten. But Billy Bob, I can't do that, you know, I just can't. And you may have to be faced with those kind of decisions. But you know what? You can do it. You can. I know you can. Watch the friendships that we have. Language that we use. Boy, it's getting kind of... Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt. Colossians 4 and 6. What's the way we use words, the way we talk, the slings that we use? Drinking. And like I said, Saturday night I'm going to deal with this. And some drug issues. Proverbs chapter 23 and 20. Do not mix with wine bibbers, for the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty. We're going to talk about that. But these are areas that's going to challenge you, and there'll be choices and decisions that us older ones are making right now. We have to watch that, and you will too. See? Okay? But if you make the wrong decision, look at his face. Isn't that pitiful? If you make the wrong decision in some of these areas, you know what? It can determine your happiness or your lack of happiness. You make the right decisions, you're a happy young man, young lady. If you make the bad decision, not so. Evil associations corrupt good manners. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 1 through 7, we'll close with this reading. Look at this and we'll close. Whoa, goodness gracious, sorry about that. Be ye followers, therefore, of God as dear children. Walk in love as Christ hath also loved us and hath given himself to us for an offering and sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling Savior. But fornication and uncleanness or covetousness, let it not once be named among you as become saints, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, as become saints. That's what you guys, that's what we are, saints. We're Christians, we're children of God, which are not convenient, but rather giving of thanks. For this ye know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no man deceive you with vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of disobedience. Be not ye therefore partakers with them. I know it's been a long service. What level are you operating on? Young ladies in the audience, I want you to listen to this story. I probably ought to quit, but I want to tell you this. I want to address these boys, but I want you to listen. And these boys. Boys, all over. There's a classroom of science teacher. He's got 11 boys. 11 boys in his class. Small school. And he's trying to teach them about the values of a rose. And he's telling them all the characteristics of flowers, but he's picked a rose here. And he's got a dozen long stem red roses. You know how much is in a dozen? How much is in a dozen? I'm sorry. Landry, how many is in 12? Very good. You knew that. You knew that, didn't you? It's right on the tip of your tongue. I know it. Yeah, it's all right. Okay. So he puts these 12 roses down on this table. Okay? And he takes one of them, and he takes this rose, and he tells them about the petals. He tells them about how the rose will open up, and he tells them how soft the petals are, and everything, and he said, I'm going to pass this rose around amongst you boys, and I want you to feel the petals. I want you to smell it. It smells so good. But I want you to be real careful. It's got thorns on it, you know, and it'll stick you, so you be real, real careful, you know, as I pass this around. So he passes the rose around. Y'all listening to this? Yeah, you need to listen. He's passing this rose around, and one boy takes it, and he rubs, and he looks at the petals, and he pulls the petals apart, and he rubs them, and then he looks at the stems and the leaves on it, passes it to the next boy, and he does the same thing, and they go through 11 boys passing this rose around. And then finally comes back to the teacher, and the class bell rings, and it's over. And the teacher lays that rose down on the table along with the other 11. And he tells those 11 boys, he said, Babe, by the way, all you boys come up here and pick one of those roses to take home to your mother. Which rose do you think's going to be left on the table? It was 12. 11 boys. Which one do you think's going to be left? Boy, you better give me the right answer. I'm going to bop somebody. The one that's going to be left is the one that's passed around. The one that's going to be left that none of the boys want is the one that's going to be passed around among everybody that everybody has handled. See, because the boys want to take home a pretty, pure, nice, beautiful rose to their mother.